keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso. Dope so, no overdose. Cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back. Alive and well on this Monday, March 13th, 2017, in this insanely exciting time. God, so much news has been happening. It's like an avalanche every single morning when I wake up and try to, get to the bottom of what's going on with all these counter narratives and, all this propaganda and all the violence and crazy, insane things that are going on all around the world. But thankfully, we have the antimedia.org, the homepage of independent media, to help us kind of break down and get to the bottom of the important stories. And, make sure you guys go over there to the site, sign up, create an account, upvote, downvote the stories so we know what's important, what's not, and submit news articles, news links to us so that we can get the news that's important to you up on the front page and get the stories over to our journalists so they can look further into them and so on and so forth, because this is a group effort here. It's not it's not us just ramming down information down your throats. We need help, and we need to find a way to get this information out to the masses, and that's what this is all about. Getting information that you normally wouldn't find to the public in an efficient way, and use it to our advantage. Use it to create change. Use it to make the world a better place. Use it to make it not so horrible for people all over the world, because we may kind of have it good here in the United States, and of course there's plenty of arguments to say that's not the case, but there's people all around the world that are suffering at the hands of our empire right now, and that's really the thing that keeps me up at night, really. I know that my money that is taken from me in taxes is going to bomb people in Yemen or in Libya or in Syria or in Iraq or in Mosul right now, which is one story that is just not being covered at all by any of the media. I mean, think about how hypocritical this is. Looking at what went on in Aleppo, I mean, we had Darius on the show a couple shows back, who is our Middle Eastern correspondent, basically, and he covers what's going on in Syria and Iraq and the Middle East, Iran, the stuff going on Russia and the proxy war between the United States and Russia and all that. He covers that stuff really closely. one of his more successful articles recently was talking about how the media coverage with Mosul is completely hypocritical, because it was only a couple months ago where Aleppo was in the headlines every single day when Russia had Aleppo encircled. The Russian-backed Syrian government had Aleppo encircled, and they were bombing the place, and there were civilians dying, and people were kind of stuck. Civilians were stuck in the crossfire, and a bunch of them undoubtedly perished or suffered. And that was headline news every day. And now it's, now with Mosul, the same, basically the same exact thing is going on, except the U.S. is on the side that's laying siege to this huge city, and a bunch of people are dying in the crossfire. In fact, one of the headlines we had on the antimedia.org this morning was that 11 civilians dead because of a U.S. airstrike in Mosul. 11 people, we killed them in a bomb that we dropped from an airstrike. I don't know if it was an airplane or a drone. But does it really matter? We killed 11 people this morning. I mean, if a plane flew over the United States and dropped a bomb on one of our cities and killed 11 people, the whole country would be ready for war tomorrow. We'd be invading some country right now, like full-scale invasion, not this, you know, airstrike and send in special ops and fund the rebels. None of that bullshit. We'd be invading somebody right now. So we go over there to Iraq. We're bombing Mosul, which is a city. It's like the third largest city in Iraq. It's got like, you know, before all this crap was going on with ISIS, they had over 1 million people living over there in this city. And we've got the whole place surrounded. We're laying siege to it. We're dropping bombs on it. But yet when you see the media coverage of Mosul, it's like, oh, well, ISIS is using people as human shields, and it's inevitable that our bombs, which are, you know, freedom-spreading bombs, are accidentally killing people because ISIS is putting them too close to our bombs. Well, that's what you hear in our media. But then just a few months ago in Aleppo, the same exact thing happens. Like, oh, Russia is horrible. Russia is bad. Russia is committing war crimes. Russia is doing terrible things in Aleppo. I agree. Russia was doing terrible things. But we're doing terrible things right now in Mosul. It's ridiculous, the hypocritical coverage going on. Anyway, on that note, let me bring in my panel, because I've got some brilliant people joining us on the show tonight. The longtime co-host, DB Schwartz. What's up, man? How you doing?
Not too bad, man. Just watching this war machine grow at a rate I didn't think possible, really. I don't know what was keeping the wraps on it. Maybe the CIA was keeping the wraps on the military, but the empire is in full expansion mode. I think it's what they call publish or perish, expand or die.
Yeah, this is really alarming. And a lot of people have been fooled by this, including myself, at least partially. I was never a person who said, you know what, I support Trump over Clinton. I was never that. I mean, I did not support either one of them. But I was under the impression that Hillary Clinton would be more hawkish on foreign policy than Donald Trump. And being that foreign policy is like pretty much my single biggest issue, if I was a single issue voter, I would be voting for the guy who is going to decrease the size of the foreign policy of the wars overseas and the empire. That's my really, really big issue.
And there's pragmatic reason for it, which we can always go into and which we have gone into, which is the big bad boogeyman of China. But, you know, who's to say, Nick, maybe we'd be in open war with Russia already if Clinton got in. Who knows?
Yeah, there's no telling. I mean, because of the fact that, you know, the election, all we know is the hypothetical stuff. Maybe Clinton would have been even worse than this. But there's no denying that Donald Trump so far has been extremely hawkish and extremely bad on foreign policy. I mean, the guy has his stated goals of defeating ISIS. And believe me, like, a lot of people voted for him because they are afraid of Islamic terrorism, even though it doesn't kill very many Americans at all. In fact, you're more likely, I think, to be struck by lightning. But besides that, Trump ran on a platform of being tough on Islamic terror. We just ran a story 2 days ago on the anti-media, 3 days ago, about how Trump is resuming arms sales to Saudi Arabia, and that even Obama wasn't even willing to sell them, because we all know Obama was a huge arms dealer, and he sold a bunch of arms, and he was arming and funding Israel, he's been arming Saudi Arabia. But towards the end there, Obama even said, okay, that's enough. We got to halt these arms sales because, I don't know, I doubt it was because he actually gave a shit, but because there started to be reports of Saudi Arabia committing really, really bad crimes in Yemen, which is another conflict that the U.S. is involved in and backing and providing material support for. So Obama said, okay, we're gonna halt these arms sales to Saudi Arabia because they're doing really bad things in Yemen. Trump just resumed that sale, you know, and so Trump is telling his followers and the people that voted for him that he's tough on terror and that he's going to do this and that. The truth of the matter is that the stuff that Trump is doing right now, it's going to create more terrorism. First of all, the first easiest way to stop the rise of terrorism is to cut off their arms, cut off their funding. That would mean that we have to cut off Saudi Arabia. Trump isn't doing that. Therefore, you know, he's really got no real intention of ending terrorism. Trump is sending more troops into the Middle East. That's like asking for more terrorism. I mean, the amount of terrorism that took place, I'd have to look up the exact number here, but before the U.S. went into Iraq was very small. And I'm talking about post 9/11 stuff here. Once we went into Iraq, terrorism just started expanding at the most alarming rate. I think it was something like 15,000%. I forget
the number. The big shift, Nick, was after Afghanistan. Terrorism it went from state funded to a personal vendetta for most people. I mean, like we've seen so many things time and time again, when your children, your family are killed in these bombs or whatever, it makes instant terrorists. So it was organic and it was homegrown post 80s.
Okay, I got the number here. First let me bring in our awesome journalist Jake Anderson into this conversation. Jake, what's up, man? How you doing tonight?
Hey, pretty good. I'm a little out of the loop, been focusing so much on this documentary, but I'm gonna get back in the news cycle here soon. But yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, I said right through the transition that Trump might act like he's going to reduce, our war crimes. He might act like, you know, he was against the wars, against the, you know, countries that were against the petrodollar. This is just an act that, and even if he dismantles part of the deep state, he'll just reappropriate it. He'll just be, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Like it's never going to change. There's this machine of insidious industry that's taken over. Eisenhower warned us about it when he left office. JFK also talked about it. There's a hideous demon head that runs our government right now, and we don't elect it. It's unelected, and it runs the show right now, and nothing can stop it, especially not one single person coming in. So I don't know why anyone thought that Trump was going to be a dovish president. I mean, that was just, I mean, I understand the idea behind it, which is, you know, you have Clinton, that's just obviously such a hawk. I mean, she put her foot down as a hawk, you know, basically from day one of war on terror, and never turned her back on it. And Trump, meanwhile, had said a few things indicating that, you know, he disagreed with the Iraq war, disagreed with toppling Gaddafi, and has been critical of the, you know, Syrian actions. But at the end of the day, war is what gets the economy moving. And in a deep state scenario like this, war is what lubricates all the engine gears and keeps the engine running.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. It's going to continue. So first, I want to bring up this article I was mentioning. It's not 15,000%. Sorry, I was wrong. 6,500% increase since the war on terror has began in terrorism. So basically, we declared war on terror. We dumped, what's the number here? Trillions of dollars into it. And the terrorism just increased a lot. So sending more troops over there, increasing the military budget 10%, which is what Trump is already doing.
They want terrorism to increase. That's the whole – they knew right from the start why it was such a perfect plan. They knew that terrorism was going to increase and that you'd have this enemy that you could use indefinitely.
Exactly. It's
don't forget that a drone crashed in Iran that we kind of let crash and then we let them take it. We've been creating our own enemies forever.
Yeah, it's not a good sign at all that Trump is being more muscular on foreign policy. This is just going to create more terrorism and stuff. Now, the other thing, and this is something that is overlooked. There's two main causes or two main motives behind homegrown terrorism. And you know, we're talking about homegrown Islamic terrorism because the main terror groups in the United States are actually like KKK type groups. They do more attacks and kill more people than, you know, Islamic terrorism. But the two main motives behind homegrown Islamic extremism in the United States are our foreign policy, which is like the Orlando shooter where he got mad that we were bombing Afghanistan and that we were killing civilians in these countries. And so he went and shot up the nightclub. And the secondary driver is isolation or kind of just basically xenophobia. That drives a lot of regular people into the hands of extremists who are out there telling this message like, oh, Americans hate you, America hates Muslims, there's a war on Islam in the United States. And every time that there's an attack on a mosque, every time that somebody treats a Muslim like shit, every time someone tries to pull off a woman's headscarf on the bus or whatever, I mean, you see these types of things happening all the time in this country. Every time something like that happens, you lead somebody further down the path or turn somebody down that path of extremism. And so Trump is doing both of these things. He's creating a fuel for the fire by creating a muscular foreign policy, putting troops over. He just sent 2,500 troops to Kuwait that are going to be deployed in both Iraq and Syria. He sent 400 troops into Syria. Again, they're sieging Mosul right now. The U.S. just bombed. This morning we reported that the U.S. bombed 11 civilians in Mosul. So, I mean, all the ingredients are there to create homegrown terrorism as well. I mean, we're not just talking about creating an insurgency in Iraq. We're not just talking about leaving a huge vacuum in place in Syria because of what we've done there. But here at home, we're creating the ingredients to create more homegrown terror as well. And these aren't people that are going to be refugees or immigrants. These are people that have already been here. And the policies that you're putting in place are going to radicalize them. And it's not even going to be just Muslims. We talked about this with Justin King several shows back. This must have been a few weeks ago, about the different types of extremism that are going to be rising around here. And think about all of the instances of police brutality and cops beating up people, shooting people. There was just a case that I saw today in Alabama where this veteran dude was getting out of his truck after a minor car accident. He sees a cop pull up, so he goes to get out of his truck to tell the cop what's going on, and he gets out, he's got his wallet in his hand, and the cops just start shooting him. Like, the guy was not, it wasn't like they pulled him over, it wasn't anything. The guy was waiting there for the cops because they were in a minor car accident. He gets out of the car and they just shoot at him. So all of these different things are going to create radicalism in every aspect of our society here. It's not just going to be Muslims who are getting pissed off at the U.S. government. It's everybody getting pissed off at the U.S. government. I mean, people from left to right are pretty up in arms right now. And being an asshole to everybody, deporting people, ripping people from their homes, reigniting the war on drugs, which is what the Trump administration seems to be looking towards doing, waging this war on weed, putting up checkpoints everywhere for deportation. I mean, you're going to make everybody in this country pissed off. It's not a good tactic, and it's not a good sign. And you're going to see really dangerous social upheavals in this country. And it's only going to be, you know, we're just waiting for something really bad to happen before we have to start seeing it play out in the streets.
They're going to test domestic warfare. I mean, the documents that have come out basically from the kind of stuff that DARPA was doing is they already view the American citizen as an enemy combatant. And what's going to happen is the deportation units start getting more ferocious, as the drug war intensifies, people are going to get more pissed off. They're going to protest more. The militarized police are going to come in, and you're going to start to see in the next couple decades, you're going to start to see more and more fighting on the home front between the cops and the people. And Trump has already said pretty clearly who he stands with on that front. And that, I think that's what you're about to see, is a growing warfare between you know, the people and their police, because the battle lines have been drawn, and I don't see how it can get better.
If you guys want to see a preview of what's to come in the coming months, go look at the final eviction at Standing Rock. You can go on theantimedia.org and search for the article that I did on it. You can see the archive videos and stuff. But I mean, basically, dude, they're using the cops as a military, and they're using the military as a backup for the cops. You know, and you got the National Guard coming in to fill the ranks where the cops don't have enough people. But a lot of these sheriff's departments, like the Morton County Sheriff, which is the one with the jurisdiction there in Standing Rock, I mean, these guys have been militarized, like, to the max. It's ridiculous. I was just at a festival yesterday here in San Diego, and there was, like, a bomb threat, apparently, and it was just overreactive paranoia. Some kid left his backpack laying there, and someone called it in as a bomb threat. It was just the dumbest thing ever. But anyway, it was a mariachi festival. But anyway, like, dude, they brought in the MRAP. They brought in, like, all these cops, and they shut the place down. They wouldn't tell anybody what was going on. Like, it was a mess, dude. It was a mess. But it just shows the paranoia and the militarization, dude. They brought in the MRAPs and the dudes, and all the cops were coming in with their armor and all this stuff. So it is kind of concerning, very concerning, how reactive these cops have become. Like, they're going to be showing up whenever there's a disturbance, and they're going to be guns blazing, tanks rolling. And I mean, go back and look at these videos. I'm telling you guys, I don't know if you get anyone that hasn't seen it needs to go back and look. They had dozens and dozens of armored vehicles rolling through Standing Rock, clearing people out, putting guns right into this dude was just sitting there praying, sitting there on the porch of this building, and he's just sitting there praying, and they roll up on him, put a gun in his face, and detain him.
That footage was so sad. That was some of the saddest footage. I didn't even see some of the close-up stuff you're talking about, but that really depressed the hell out of me.
Yeah, dude. It's really frightening. But people need to remember we outnumber these people by a lot. I mean, think about how many jurisdictions had to come into Standing Rock. I mean, how many different departments? They had to bring in like 10 or 15 or 20 different sheriff's departments to try to fill the ranks. And as we talked about a while back, a lot of those guys came and they saw what was going on. They went back home, and when they tried to redeploy them out there, they refused to go.
Yeah, that happened here, Nick. We actually, as a result of that, the sheriff's department here, they actually told the citizens, we need you guys to be more engaged and have an oversight committee with some teeth, have some attorneys on your committee, because we're getting ordered to go. We don't have a choice. If we don't go, we get fired. We have families to feed. So we didn't want to go. We had to go. We wasted, I think our bill was like over $1 million. And it's just ridiculous, dude.
That's crazy. It's crazy. But, you know, the public pressure campaign worked partially. there, and a lot of those sheriff's departments decided not to go back. So it is interesting to see. But that's the thing. For one event, they had to bring in a bunch of different departments. We outnumber them by a lot. I mean, for every armed militarized cop, there's like 100,000 people. So they can only win. They really can only win this psychologically. The only thing the cops have working to their advantage is the perception that they're invincible, and that they're always going to win.
Well, and the bigger perception, which is that we can't survive without police and the state, you know, that's the big perception. That's the big lie, which is that, you know, society as we know it would collapse into just roving hordes of lunatics if we didn't have the state collecting us together. And I think, you know, that's
they're at the point where they can create a mass chaos event too to prove their value, and that's
right.
That's really their final trump card, if you will. If they feel cornered, and it's getting close for a lot of these people, because we'll talk, I'll keep bringing it up. The pedal rings are getting busted. People are singing. It is going up the chains. It's just not being talked about. It's like you say, Nick, with the checkpoints over there. There's not a word over here. Nobody, I never even heard of that. Nobody here knows anything about that now. So this is even with the internet, we're seeing that possibly maybe the censorship's easier for them because people go Google it, and if it doesn't pop up, it can't be real, right?
I would argue that the entire war on terror has been a stopgap measure, a necessary one. They realized at the end of the 90s that there was really nothing necessitating the state, and that as people, you know, got smarter and more organized, that eventually a lot of their functions wouldn't be necessary. And now, you know, look, I mean, would you really think that they'd be able to get some of this shit by without the war on terror? Do you really think that they would be recording the audio from our phones when they're turned off? Do you really think they'd be able to get by with that without the war on terror? The war on terror created a carte blanche, battleground of civil liberty violations. It would have never been possible without the war on terror.
Do you know, with Trump's bonus to the military, we've now crossed quite a threshold, in that we're now appropriating for the first time 60% of our GDP to our military, and I think we're going to reach a point of no return here where we're going to have it up at around 90%, and once we're at that point, then you're going to see literally everything from every road becoming a toll to every single thing you do becoming a transaction, being a reality. And that's what true fascism is. It's when corporations and the government merge into one entity that literally lifts everything out of your pockets.
And they're going to keep using, I'm not saying all of them are false flags, but they're going to keep using strategic ones. And also opportunistic attacks. They'll use whatever they have to keep people scared, because as long as you keep people scared, you can keep the necessity of the state there.
And people are scared as shit right now, man. People are scared as shit. Donald Trump was a fear candidate. He ran on fear. He ran on, oh, we got to be scared of Mexicans. We got to be scared of Muslims. We got to be scared of everybody. And I'm the only one that can protect you. And everybody,
which is very fascistic, actually. The way he said that, in some of his speeches, he literally said, "I'm the only one that can stop this." I mean, you want to talk about a dictator? Who says that shit?
Hitler. Not to just, you know, I don't want to throw it around lightly, but we're not dealing in light times, man. I'm not one to call my political enemy a Nazi or to compare anybody to Hitler. I never really compared, Obama to Hitler. Very, very rare occasions, if I have. But
Trump isn't Hitler yet. But if there's a major terrorist attack on American soil, you're going to see the next internment camps, and I'm not even joking at all. If Muslims do a terrorist attack, Trump is going to turn into that person, and it's going to happen, and everyone fucking knows it's going to happen too.
And it would happen, and you know what? there would be protests and shit, but nobody, I'm not sure that there would be a huge uprising in this country. The Trump's Muslim ban, whatever you want to call it, everyone, oh, it's not a Muslim ban, or everyone's like, oh yeah, it's a Muslim ban. Well, whatever you want to call it, when he banned all the travel from all those countries, now I think it's down to like six.
Yeah, they took Iraq off.
Look, there was protesters shutting down airports and shit, right? But that was his most popular policy to date. That's the most popular thing he's done. That's got over 50% of this country supported that. I think people underestimate. It's not like, oh, well, just Republicans are xenophobic and they're scared of Muslims. Fine. But liberals aren't. Liberals are going to be, you know, liberals are going to defend Muslims. No, they're not. I'm sorry, but they're not. Liberals sat around, didn't do shit while Obama bombed seven Muslim countries. They didn't do shit.
Also, they didn't do shit while Obama deported 2.5 million immigrants. I mean, do liberals realize that no president has ever deported as many immigrants as Obama did, 2.5 million?
Yeah, that's the thing, dude. You know, again, going back to look, the wall isn't nearly as popular as the Muslim ban. More than 50% of people in this country, a lot more than 50%, I don't know the exact number, but it was between 50 and 60%, agree that we should be banning travel from certain Muslim countries. So if, like you said, if a big terror attack happened and it was blamed on, let's say it was blamed on a Muslim refugee or immigrant or whatever, and Trump said, okay, well, you know, we have no choice. I don't want to do it, but we got to start rounding up these Muslims because, or maybe we have to start rounding up a certain type of people. Maybe we have to round up all of the immigrants in this country, all of the Muslim immigrants in this country, all of the Muslim refugees in this country, round them up, put them in camps. There would be opposition, but there wouldn't be enough to stop it. And, you know, you want to look for a real life example. It's already happening, dude. It's happening with the immigrants coming up from Central America. They're being detained in these huge camps right now at the border. They're detaining these people. I don't know if you guys have seen the pictures, haven't you?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the pictures got leaked out like a year and a half ago or so. And, you know, they're already putting people in camps, dude. Like, it's going on right now with mostly people from like Honduras and Guatemala and stuff, people trying to come up through the border through on the border of Mexico. They're already putting those guys in camps. And I just read a story about how Trump is now going to, because some of what Obama was doing, some of the stuff Obama was doing where he would detain people and then they'd release them. Now Trump is pushing for a new policy where they basically detain these people and they don't let them go for who knows how long. So like, we're talking about a perpetual immigrant detention centers, more or less. And that this is the policy that is being pushed through right now, and I'm telling you guys, it's not unpopular. A lot of the country agrees with this kind of stuff. And so, you know, we don't want to make the mistake of saying, okay, well, if it's popular, then it's good, and if it's unpopular, then it's bad. We need to take a much more principled stand here, because we can't just say, well, most people agree with it, therefore, you know, we got to do it. You know, back during World War II, most people agreed that we should intern Japanese people, Japanese American, U.S. citizens.
And Germans and Italians, don't forget.
Yeah, most people thought that was a great idea, and it happened. And nobody really, at the time, there was very little resistance to it. Now, of course, we look back at it. We look back and say, man, I can't believe that happened. I can't believe we interned Japanese people. And at the same time, I guarantee you, you can go ask somebody who may be a Trump supporter, say, oh, what do you think about that? Oh, that was horrible. I can't believe we did that. It's like, well, do you think we should do that to Muslims? You know, give them a scenario, and they'd be like, well, yeah, maybe. You know, like, people aren't putting two and two together here. They're not having principles here. They're not saying, well, yeah, we shouldn't discriminate against people because of their religion, because, you know, let's say the person's a Christian. I would never allow the government to round up Christians. But then you replace that with a Muslim, and it's all different. I mean, there's already been a bunch of polling to support this that shows that people are literally they say they believe in religious liberties and stuff, but only if it's Christian. Like, it's unbelievable, dude. So to think that this kind of stuff can't happen, I'm here to tell you that it can, and I'm here to tell you that it's pretty popular, in fact, and it's there's not going to be as nearly as much resistance, like real resistance. I mean, yeah, there's going to be people marching in the streets, and at the moment someone breaks a window, they're, oh my God, I can't believe they're breaking windows. This is unbelievable. Meanwhile, there's like a million people being put.
This is adversely affecting businesses, you know. Yeah, it's also adversely affecting millions of families, you freaking idiot.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because now they have all these scapegoats, since basically we're teetering on disaster's edge for the economy. We're teetering on disaster's edge for North Korea, for the Middle East. There's a lot of hotspots, and if any of them pop off, and if anybody tries to get in the way of what they consider a national security issue, which really is what DAPL boiled down to, then they steamroll you. They steamroll you with relish, and then anyone who questions it not only is unpatriotic, but to the gulag for you. And this is the USSA evolution, man. We're taking a playbook from the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union broke apart because, well, we broke them apart. But I guess they figure we can survive something like that. It's pure lunacy, and it's the end of the empire, like everyone's saying. And if the economy goes or if a war goes first, either way, it doesn't matter. It's still going to be used as a scapegoat.
Ah, man. Yeah, dude. Some heavy stuff. Heavy, heavy stuff. Now, here where we're located, where I'm personally located, we're in a little bit of a different area of the country. You know, we're here in San Diego, the far, far corner of the Southwest. And people around here are, I think, feel a little differently about a lot of this stuff, especially considering that most of the people that live around here are Latinos, and California is 50% Latino. And, you know, we're talking about 15, 20 million Latinos in California alone. So I don't know if that kind of thing would fly around here. And again, it goes back to this. There's huge gulfs of differences between different places in this country. And people believe in many, many different things, and they think different ways. You know, where I'm at, I've got a neighbor here who is Iraqi, and his wife is Mexican, and they're the nicest people, and they're amazing. And we wouldn't think twice about questioning. We would never question who these people are. But I guess in other parts of the country where people maybe don't look like that, you know, you can say, oh, well, all these types of people are bad people, and all people who are Iraqi refugees need to be questioned and you know, possibly detained and checked, or we should wiretap their houses, or we should go in and search their houses or something. That is already happening in many places, and I'll tell you what, people are plotting it. They're plotting it. I just saw an article about these people who went up to Canada to go visit, and they came back, and the customs agents wanted to search through their phones, and so they did. They let them do it, and they searched their phones, and then they were on their way. And then they went back to Canada again, and when they came back, they tried to do it again, and the guy refused. And they put him in a headlock. And they put the guy into a headlock, and were like choking him out because he refused to hand over his phone so that the government could go through his phone and make sure he wasn't a terrorist. The guy's a U.S. citizen, man. You know, and we're supposed to have rights. You know what I mean? They're supposed to be like, we're supposed to have this Bill of Rights and the Constitution and, you know, all this stuff that's supposed to guarantee rights for us and restrain the strength of the government and stuff. Now, the thing is that stuff, it doesn't really work. I mean, you can have all the laws on the books that you want, but a cop is still going to pull his gun out and shoot you if you don't follow his own personal rules. If you get out of your car while he's walking up with your wallet in your hand, like the guy just did in Alabama, you're going to get shot. That the Bill of Rights isn't going to save your life. You know, like if you're lucky enough to survive, then yeah, maybe afterwards you get a lawsuit and you get $500,000 because the cop wrongfully shot you. But if you die, you're dead. That's it.
And they're going to try to make sure you do not survive, because what I've been starting to see is that in terms of just total money, they'll pay a lot less when they accidentally kill someone than when they let them live and have to pay for their care the rest of their life.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. And here's the thing, and this may be getting more on down into the more radical elements, and I know maybe some people won't follow along on this, but you know what? Like, the Black Panthers had the right ideas. People's communities need to become independent of the state. You guys, we need to start securing our rights and our liberties, not relying on the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. These are pieces of paper, dude, and you could strap the Bill of Rights to your chest. It's not going to stop a bullet. We need the only rights that we truly have in the United States are those that you can secure yourself personally. And if you can secure your right, then that's your right. You have it. If you can't, someone can take it away from you.
You just hit the nail on the head for why having a co-optive community is vital for not only your financial security, but your personal security going forward if things happen where the grid goes down and supply chains are disrupted. If you can grow your own food and secure your own place, I saw, Nick, you posted something about buying a town in Oregon.
Yeah.
There's a lot cheaper places in more secure locations than that, although I understand the appeal of Oregon. But it's something to look into going forward as we start to accumulate money, hopefully, as we have success and realize that what do we do with our money in reality? I mean, we put it into this financial system we know that will teeter on the brink of collapse and then finally will at some point. And we are not financial experts. So the best thing you can possibly do with your money would be to secure your actual survival while you can.
Yeah. Dude.
Nick, what do you think the reality of that? What does she need? Like a million?
It's 4 million, dude. And that's ridiculous. There's villages in Canada where you can buy them for like 250,000-300,000.
Yeah, it's a little expensive.
But Oregon's beautiful, and it's also
the
state.
The U.S., dude.
The state is impeccable. Yeah, true. That's true.
If anything goes down, you're going to have 330 million hungry mouths with guns. Better to be up somewhere kind of far away where you can grow pot legally and you can still get lots of hydroelectric power.
You want to turn away the hungry mouths?
I'm not saying to turn them away. I'm saying they're going to eat you.
They'll be serving Jacob on a platter.
go for my calves, man. I got really juicy calves.
No, but this is some serious stuff, dude. Like, the Black Panthers had it right. Like, we need to get our own. We need to be securing our own educations. We need to be securing ourselves financially and economically, and literally securing our own person. Like, we need groups of people. And for a more modern example, I would definitely recommend going back and reading up on some of the writings of the Black Panthers and the history of that stuff. But, you know, Derek Brose has been talking about this idea of, like, freedom cells. This is a really good idea to look into as well. Because, like I said, dude, like, going back to what we were talking about, you know, when people start getting, when they start rounding up Muslims, or when they start just massively rounding up immigrants and setting up checkpoints and stuff, there's going to be liberal protesters, sure, but these are the same people that voted for Obama and sat around while Obama did everything he did.
These, like, are the same people that marched with pussy hats on.
They're not going to be, like, arm in arm with you violently opposing oppression. I'm guaranteed they're not. Those aren't the people that are going to be doing that. You need to find people that will be, though, that are willing to go to those lengths to secure their freedom, if that's your thing. If that's your thing. Like, if freedom is important to you and you think that you want to stand up for freedom regardless of the costs, well, then this is what I'm talking about. If it's not a deal, like, you know, and it's really easy for people who fall into the category of people who aren't going to be subject to this, these horrible things. Now, I, you know, personally, I there's no telling what would happen to me. But, you know, I have so many people I care about that could be subject to this stuff that I'm not the type to be sitting around and just going out and wearing a pussy hat and saying, this isn't okay. We can stop this. This is not right. I am not that type. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the stuff that I'm willing to go through to fight for freedom, but the lengths are pretty great, basically.
Nick, tell me about where you were thinking 20 miles east. Here's the thing. Dearborn, Michigan is an enclave for Iraqi immigrants. They know they're going to be safe enough there when things go south because there's 25,000 Iraqis there and they're a tight-knit community. And here in part of Minneapolis, it's Somali. And they're all tight-knit and they'll protect each other and support each other. And the truth of the matter is that if you're in a marginalized community in your area and you're in a minority and you feel like there could be a problem or an issue going forward if the cops and the society don't respond to your protection, then it's totally fine to start planning an enclave or even a neighborhood watch together with people around you and find out who is armed, who has a gun, who could help you immediately. Don't wait for cops. I mean, in here in Minneapolis, that's a necessity. We find out. We're like, do you have a gun? Yeah, immediately around you. Yeah, this is, I'm so-and-so. We meet each other. Why do they do that? Because there's break-ins here. So that way everybody kind of knows who they could go to immediately if they have to. And it's just, that's a reality for a lot of this country, is that things can get violent, things can get dangerous, and you need to start kind of getting into a preparation mode now. You're starting to see the cracks in the empire. When the empire falters, gas stops. You know, everything is imported, really, except like cornflakes and bread and pork. And we're going to have a very limited amount of limited food. All the imports are going to stop when our economy collapses. I mean, everybody's going to have guns. Imagine if you don't have a gun, imagine how it's going to be. It's going to be like being naked in winter. It's going to suck. So just get ready for it, because even if it doesn't come, just prepare for the worst.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the thing. All we're talking about here, I'm not saying that this stuff is going to happen, guaranteed. I'm not guaranteeing this stuff. I'm not saying that there's going to be some crazy terror attack and they're going to use that as an excuse to round up Muslim refugees. Now, that definitely could happen, and I would say it's kind of likely. I'm not saying it will, but here's the thing. Regardless of that, what we're talking about essentially here is decentralization and saying, you know what, let's start relying less on importing food from who knows where into our community, and let's start focusing more on growing our own food. And let's start focusing more on generating our own electricity. Let's start focusing more on creating our own communications, our own internet. Let's start focusing more on creating our own defense, our own neighborhood, you know, peacekeeping systems. I don't even want to call them the cops, but let's just say, you know, neighborhood peacekeeping. And look, the more that we can do that now, the better off we'll be regardless of what happens. Whether nothing happens at all and the status quo continues on for the foreseeable future, you still got a better localized system set up that is more secure, safer, more harmonious, better, more well-fed, more healthy, cheaper electricity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you've got all that stuff as an added bonus. And then in the case of something really stupid does happen, well, then you're prepared for when that crap happens. You know, and so it's a win-win. No matter what happens, you're better off. You get rid of the cops. You can start fixing your own potholes on the floor. You could lower your taxes because you no longer need the services of the government.
Well, you could go next generation, Nick, that they won't do in cities, because rebuilding roads is a cash cow. But if you put in solar panel roads, they have a lifetime warranty on them. And if you put in solar roofs on all the buildings, you don't have electrical anymore, but they're all intertied. The interests of big business and city planning, the interests of big business and profit making out of nothing and making monopolies is all this country is. And then we export all of our poverty out through war. But we still have a huge underclass here that's getting bigger, and their lives are going to become harder and harder. And when enough people have a hard enough life and it's they have nothing left to lose, that's when revolution is a guarantee. It's inevitable. You can't stop it, period. And they'll never be able to round up all these guns ever. So this is going to come if we don't fix things. And we've got to fix things at a local level and help the poorest people. What I've been thinking is, like, we have so many government subsidies that get wasted on pork belly products that go to, like, bullshit industry. Why don't we just give poor people, if you're really poor but you own a home, here's free solar panels. Now you're off grid. Now you're not our problem anymore. Now there's no more subsidies for your electrical bill. It's just free. Like, there's ways to proactively get ahead of what we know is coming. We have to build the green infrastructure, period. And putting 50 or 60 billion into the military, it's that's money we could have used to chip away at the 1 trillion we'd need to redo all of our infrastructure for the future. And we have to tackle it at some point. I can only think they think we're going to have a world war. We're going to have all our infrastructure destroyed, and they're just going to rebuild it for the survivors, I guess.
DB 2020.
Dude, I mean, seriously, like, we have money coming out of our gills, but it's going to the worst places you can imagine.
Yeah, you're right. Well,
we spent about, you know, 3 to 5 trillion on a stupid Middle East wars.
And just the black budget alone, I mean, the black budget by itself, I think, would eliminate poverty worldwide easily. But what is it there for? To have a control grid for the top 0.11111% or whatever the hell it is, the 10,000 people that run Western world.
Yeah, they say that. I think for $30 billion annually, you could eradicate hunger. $30 billion annually. I mean, we just increased our military spending by $60 billion annually. So half of what we just increased, and we're not even talking about cutting spending, we're talking about half of what we just increased in military spending could eradicate hunger worldwide.
And those are wasted lives, because you've seen those pictures of starving kids, and that's just a waste. What a complete, total waste of a life to die from starvation when there's plenty of food.
And they're
there's plenty of food.
They're malnourished. Their brains don't develop well, and there's all kinds of issues that go along with malnourishment. They have health issues throughout the rest of their lives. We could have fixed that problem. What is a recruiting rank for terrorists? Well, easy. You find people that are hungry and you give them a meal. You tell them that we'll give you this hot meal. We're going to teach you why your life is bad. Your life is bad because of what the Westerners have done to our country. And there you go. You got a new terrorist ready to go die and give his life because you got a hot meal when he was starving. And he got a story that kind of makes sense because we give him that fuel, we give him that ammunition to give it to him. So, everything, for the most part, that the United States is doing around the world to supposedly increase our safety is backwards. We're spending money on bombs to go blow people up instead of spending money on food and water and energy to help people. Instead, we're blowing their stuff up. We're blowing up bridges. We're blowing up homes. We're bombing neighborhoods, killing children. That's not how you make the world a safer place. You make the world a safer place by making sure people aren't hungry and going around committing acts of violence because they're hungry.
With the resources and the technology we could have everyone on Earth clothed and fed and educated, and then we could do the same thing on the Moon and Mars and set up colonies there and have Martian and lunar colonies, and everyone there is fed and clothed too. But instead, we're spending all this money on war. It's insane. It's just insane.
It's totally mind-blowing, dude. Totally mind-blowing. And we're all paying for it. And it's coming out of our paychecks. And all it does is make a few people, a handful of people, like, really rich.
And it's completely bogus, too, because half the things we go to secure are just natural resources that happen to be a bit easier, a bit lower hanging fruit. But we've had the technical capacity to synthesize literally almost all the stuff we go grab right here at home. But you know what? That's against the whole, that was against the control grid. I don't know how it's going to be now with nationalism resurging. But I mean, what I mean to say is that we go on these wars of exploration to secure natural resources, and we do it because it's a little bit cheaper to go do that and then secure the local population as slave labor. But we could home grow and home produce almost anything we'd ever need, except maybe some of the more exotic foods and stuff like that. But I mean, we're at the behest of corporations that take us for a ride every single day and make us think we need them, and we don't need them at all. We haven't needed them for like 15 years since computers have been decent at home.
Yeah, dude. Great point. That kind of brings us on, or meant bring this up for the end of the show here. The top story of the day over on theantimedia.org. U.S. Special Forces preparing to topple Kim Jong-un. Hopefully everybody had a chance to read the story today. This isn't like, there's not like a, we're not like planning on going in there anytime soon and toppling this guy, but this is just something they've been training for, to take out the North Korean government and to take out their missile system and all their military capabilities, which really isn't very big, comparatively speaking. North Korea is a very, very poor country. They have a very rudimentary missile system. And you know, they're probably capable of carrying out dirty bomb attacks and stuff.
They have some nuclear artillery, and they could level Seoul. And that's what everyone's worried about. And actually, China has said if anything were to happen to South Korea, they'd just go in and knock North Korea out themselves, because they'd consider it like, you know, without their permission to do that. So there's your powder keg.
Yeah, yeah. And so this is something to keep an eye on, because, you know, the North Korean propaganda has been going on for a long, 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 long time. We're talking about back to like the 50s when, you know, we went to war in Korea. Of course, people in our generation weren't alive back then. I know my grandpa, one of my grandfathers was drafted during the Korean War. He didn't actually go into Korea, but he went to, I think he was in, they stationed him in Italy or something like that. But you know, I've had you know, one of my grandparents drafted during the Korean War. So, you know, we've already been and fought there one time, and then at the end we wound up fighting the Chinese, and that's when we got our asses, you know, kicked out of Korea, basically, out of North Korea anyway. And then they drew up the new lines, and you know, they got their North and South thing going on. But this is a contentious place. There's been propaganda going on against North Korea since the 50s. So it's very deep rooted. Like, everybody knows about North Korea, and now there's a bunch of saber rattling going on with North Korea. This is a hot spot to keep an eye on, you guys. We're going to be looking back at this on Wednesday, see what's developed in North Korea, because it's not a good situation. They just moved nuclear capable aircraft. They moved drones in there. They moved the THAAD missile system into South Korea, and now the big headline today on the anti-media is they're practicing to take out the North Korean government. So this is a hot spot to keep an eye on. We're going to be talking about this again on Wednesday. Thank you all for tuning in to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Same day, same place, 5 days a week. Peace out. Everybody. I'ma let 'em know, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.